Welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm talking to Lisa Ghazi, co-writer and performer of a new play, Birongana, Women of War. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Birongana, it's a play around the story of the women of the Liberation War of Bangladesh. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what drew you to the subject matter and why you decided to explore this theme?
Birangana women are those women who were raped and tortured systematically by the Pakistani army and the local collaborators during the Liberation War of Bangladesh in 1971. I grew up hearing these stories from my father. My father was a freedom fighter, and few stories I will never forget them. You know, they will stay with me forever. And one of those stories was about Birangana women. He had seen hundreds of raped women and girls standing back to back on a convoy of trucks just right after 16th of December, the Victory Day of Bangladesh. These women were rescued from rape camps and army barracks. He witnessed one of these many convoy of trucks. That image, whenever I think of Birangana women, that image came straight to me. And in 2010, I went to Bangladesh for another project from here. And after that project, one of my friends told me that she's going to go to meet these women. She goes every year with, you know, winter clothes and some funding from people. And I just wanted to go and meet them. I didn't have any plan to make a theatrical piece or anything. I just wanted to meet them. And when I decided to go, I thought that if they give me the permission, then I would like to take a film crew, a very small film crew, to kind of capture their accounts. And they kindly, you know, gave me the permission, and I went there with a small, very small film crew, and I interviewed them and filmed their, first-hand accounts. We did it in 2010.
It was an R&D type of a thing.
Nothing. I just went to meet them, and I thought that because our liberation war have not been documented properly, and we don't have many kind of facts about these women, because something. After 75 and. Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, the father of the nation, was assassinated with his family. All the help and support was withdrawn from these women.
So can you just explain, so straight after the war, these women who were systematically raped and tortured as a weapon of war were given a kind of an honorary status, and they were provided for by the newly created Bangladesh state.
Interim government, yes. Right. Yes.
And then when the first prime minister
was assassinated, then all these help and support and were withdrawn from them, and they were literally in the streets, and there were centers in every city of Bangladesh, and one or two centers in a bigger cities, but they were all shut down and burned down.
So they were destitute.
They were destitute, and many of them don't even. They didn't want to talk about it, and.
But was there a taboo in the society about how these women were perceived?
Absolutely, absolutely. You can. We still carry that collective shame, you know, and it's a huge taboo for a patriarchal society and conservative society and societies. They see these women as a shame of. What happened to them? It becomes the shame of the entire nation, and on the process, these women were forgotten for more than two decades.
But you're saying that alongside that, the history of the Liberation War has not really been discussed within the schools and states of Bangladesh itself.
Yes, after 75, we saw two very nasty coups. And we saw that freedom fighters were harassed, even sometimes killed. They were given early retirement from the army or air forces. I was very, very little. So I came to know about these stories about 71 through my father. But I have witnessed people, literally they were taking shelter at our homes, like an army officer, one of my father's best friend. He was with us for 3 months. He was hiding, and we were almost actually caught. But that's a different story.
Well, is this because of the coup?
He was one of the freedom fighters in army. So when we grew up, we are the first generation of newborn nation, and in our history book we read that we fought against perpetrators. But who those perpetrators were, he was with us for 3 months. He was hiding, and we were almost actually caught. But that's a different story.
Well, is this because of the coup?
He was one of the freedom fighters in army. So when we grew up, we are the first generation of newborn nation, and in our history book we read that we fought against perpetrators, but who those perpetrators were, we were not allowed to know. And Razakars, the local collaborators who helped and supported Pakistani army in mass killing and all these atrocities, we were not allowed to know.
So can you just explain? So Bangladesh was part of
East Pakistan, yeah. Bangladesh was East Pakistan, yeah. Yes. And after 47, when this huge division happened, Bangladesh became the part of Pakistan. Just because we shared the same religion, but we didn't have anything in common. And the rest of the country, absolutely, that rest of the country was 1,000 miles apart from us.
There were these two wings.
Two wings.
The side of India.
Absolutely. And yeah. And it's ridiculous. But yeah, that's what we had. And we didn't have anything in common. The language was not the same. The culture was not the same. We were less Muslim.
But it was a Muslim nation.
Yeah, if you know
Muslim
what I mean.
Because
yeah, because we shared the same culture as
Bengal,
as Bengalis. And our culture is singing, wearing teeps. I don't know whether you, what you call it.
Oh, the bindi on bindi. The forehead.
Yes, forehead. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
And, dance and arts, and this is our culture, and this is why we were seen less Muslim,
by your big brother, as it were,
but though we shared the same country, and our language was denied in 1952, and there was a huge uprising, mass uprising, and we lost many, many lives there. And on the 21st of February, which is now the International Mothers Language Day.
Oh, I see.
That's the day where in the demonstration, Pakistani army, I mean, the government of Pakistan, fired guns and rifles, and many students were killed then. So it's not 71. It hasn't 71 didn't happen just overnight. It's kind of a continuous kind of a movement
for liberation, and that's where in 1971, you know, it
broke into like a fully fledged war between
absolutely,
the two
and it was
wings.
It was a people's movement. Sometimes we forget that it was not a political party's movement. It was not elitist movement. It was absolutely people's driven, you know, struggle and movement and war. I think I have diverted myself.
No,
from
it's just the context is helpful.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
don't want this to become a conversation about history, but
yeah.
But you, as a young child, were born in Bangladesh and growing up there, so you're observing these women around.
Yeah, I was born in 1969, so I was very little.
You were tiny when it
happened. Yeah,
very little.
And I grew up hearing these stories because there's no way, we didn't have any opportunity to know our own history through our history books or any media because it was shut down. So these women were silenced, you know, by the nation, by the state, also by us in their own homes, in the society. And they were forgotten, their stories were forgotten. And I don't know whether you know that I believe the 71 is one of the most forgotten genocide in the 20th century. So you can imagine where these women stand, nowhere in the Western countries or even in Bangladesh. There's so many young Bangladeshis didn't have any clue about them. Though, I mean, if you think about the number, 200 to 400,000 women and girls were systematically raped.
It's a big figure.
It's a big figure. But, yeah.
So are you, as a company or a performer, drawn to trying to uncover, say, lost histories of your heritage, Bangladesh, or testimonial-type theatre? I mean, you went and interviewed these women, as you said, into a film thing because you wanted to preserve their testimonies because many of them are now in their 70s and so on.
Yeah.
But when you came back here, it seemed like you got together with a couple of other performers.
Yes.
Sohini Alam, who I know
Phyllis,
as a
Phyllis
singer.
Phyllis Oskan, yeah.
And Phyllis
Oskan, she's the director. Kathleen Abort, she's the designer of the show. Yes.
Yeah, and you decided that you wanted to find some artistic way of telling the world about
their stories. Because when I first, when I took their interviews, 21 Birangana Women, in a center near Dhaka, is called Uttoron Mohila Shangsta. One of them told me that, what's the point of telling you these stories? Nothing happens. And that haunted me for quite a long time, but I didn't know what to do with them. I had those, I still have these, first-hand accounts, like hours of accounts, and I don't know what to do with them. I went to local community channels because I didn't have the money, whether they can give me the, you know, editing panel so that I can edit and show. And that they were very helpful. They said, yes, but it didn't happen. And then these fellow artists and theater practitioners, I met them through different shows, and it so happens that sometimes we kind of in the same production.
You are a well-known figure in the kind of South Asian performing arts scene in the UK. I've seen you in quite a few things. In Tara shows, for
Tara
example.
Shows, yes.
As well as in the readings that... around the Tamina Anam,
Our Golden
book.
Age, yes.
Yes. You're quite well known, and you're a script, you translate, and
yes.
You've done work with Globe to Globe. I mean, I think you're like the hidden sort of person who does a lot of work. You know?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but yes, somehow I you know, I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to work with these brilliant theatre practitioners, Sohini Alam, Phyllis Uskan, Kathleen Abbott. And because we were kind of freelancing, the kind of theatre we'd like to do or make or create, it was not happening. And, you know, we were thriving to create something that we would like to create. And then I pitched this idea to them. And they just said, this is it. This is what we want to do. And we formed this theatre company, arts and theatre company, Komala Collective. And what we want to do is we want to tell stories from women's perspectives, the stories that often go untold. And
This is your inaugural production in a way, right?
Yes,
right.
Yes, it is our debut production, yes.
Yeah. And so let's just talk a bit about how you've then managed to take all that raw material, if you like, mm-hmm. of their real testimonials, because we're sitting here in the dressing room of the Lost Theatre, where you're just about to open a lovely theatre in Vauxhall. I didn't know it existed, actually. Yeah. And
yeah, we're opening on the... Can I say that?
You can, but I don't know if it will help you in that
That's
sense.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're sort of running in April and then you'll be in Wimbledon. But I got an opportunity to see you at the Rich Mix.
Yes.
No, just to talk about the style of the artistic sort of interpretation. You've got like two actors on stage and you are the main performer who's in front of the audience playing almost like the roles of all the women, and then then sometimes there is this stage
shadow acting.
Yeah, and then video talk about the artistic process in a little way if you can.
What we wanted to do initially, we wanted to do a verbatim theatrical piece. But we couldn't do this because these women don't speak English. So then we thought that, well, how we do this, and we wanted to show their faces. We wanted to want people to hear their voices. One main reason for me, Phyllis can, our director can tell her ideas behind the whole process. But for me, that these Virangana women was a collective entity for me. I tried to imagine their faces. I couldn't, because they're Virangana women. They have that term.
What is the meaning of the term Virangana?
Virangana means brave woman.
Was that a term given to them after the
term
war?
Term given to them. And I would like to say this here, that I came to know about the fact from Dr. Narnika Mukherjee, that after, just right after 16th of December, which
1971.
Is 1971, which is our victory day, 6 days after our victory day, interim government announced that these women need to be given, you know, the due respect, and this is why they're kind of giving the title Virangana women, and it is unprecedented till now that any state actually recognize
the victims of the war, the
raped victim of the war. In that sense, it is huge. I take pride in that. But look what happened next. Everything went horribly, horribly wrong. So.
So for you, there was not like a face of one woman. When you thought of them, you thought of like thousands.
200,000 women.
Right.
You know,
and how to convey this.
And I wanted to see them.
Right.
I wanted to know them. And I wanted to talk to them. I wanted to know how they were in their childhood. I can get very emotional. And sorry for that.
No, it's fine. I can hear it in your voice. It's good. Yeah.
And so...
So when you and the director, Phyllis, were discussing the process,
then, yes,
although you are the only female actor on stage, it's like two actors, but we've got some video projection and some of the style of the performance is a bit folk, I would say. I don't really
yeah.
know. It's a bit of a general word. And you hear the voice of Sohini Alam, who sings some different songs. There's a Bengali lullaby. I mean, can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, you're trying to give a microcosm of this.
Yeah, I mean, the main character in this play is Moriam. She talks about other women. She meets these women in the rape camp, and she remembers them. And she remembers her childhood. She remembers how it was, how beautiful it was, and she also remembers what had happened to her during the war, and other women, real actual Virangana women's first-hand accounts are woven into the piece. So first, we wanted to create this play with three Virangana women, and then we thought that because we're presenting real Virangana women, five of them, and if three women on stage, it would be too much, because she can talk about what happened to her and her experience in rape camps, and she can talk about other women, and we have met like women like this. And Moriam, the character I'm playing, is actually culmination of 3-4 real Brahmana stories, and we have used animation. There's a beautiful folk story. It's called Komala, and it's about a princess and the king had to sacrifice her daughter to kind of save the country.
So you weave in a lot within,
yes,
the artistic sort of interpretation.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I don't want to give away the whole
story of your piece, but the
style, the process is what, you know, is interesting to explore.
Because yes,
you haven't gone for straight testimonial, verbatim theatre. It's a bit more, the interpretation is a bit more artistic, and the style of approaches, you're mixing 3 or 4 techniques.
Techniques, yeah. Yes, tools, yes. 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 I mean, I don't know whether we did it properly or not, but we tried to kind of mix and use multiple techniques and tools of theatre. So hopefully it works.
But just to answer your own question when you raised earlier, so why do you think their story needs to be told?
Because otherwise I feel if I don't know their stories, I don't know who I am. Because these women, I don't like the word sacrifice, because what they lost, you can't sacrifice that. You can sacrifice your life for your country, but you can't sacrifice, I don't know what I should call them. I don't like the word honor even. So what they had lost, they in the process, they had not lost themselves, maybe their dignity, but they lost everything. You know, when we talk about sexual violence during conflict, it's not only rape is a huge, the most heinous crime, but you're not facing only that. In the process, you're also facing losing your children, losing your livelihood, losing your entire life. So, and after that, if you see these women, oh my God, the strength, the resilience they show. We were crying. After the interview, we were crying like anything, and they were like hugging us, embracing us, kissing us on our foreheads, and it's like, you know, it's okay, we're okay. Where this is coming from, this strength and power, we have to know that, you know, to know who we are.
Lisa Garcia, thank you very much for talking to Theatre Voice. Thank you.